Mean Girls.
Hey,
this is a real Mean Girls. Mean Girls remake.
What was that?
It's a Broadway adaptation. It's a movie adaptation of the Broadway musical, which is an adaptation of the movie. So we've come.
Welcome to Health and Human
Full Circle.
We'll be getting into abstinence, of course, then followed by in the spring.
This looks stupid. Why doesn't it make? Okay.
Very stupid, but Hollywood's out of ideas.
Hello, and thank you very much for downloading this most recent episode of Movie Guys Podcast. You can download many more episodes at movieguyspodcast.podbean.com.
I would like to go on record and say that this movie does not whatsoever need to be this freaking long. There was like 12 scenes that I could just cut from this movie to make it a brisk hour and a half. We're talking Thelma and Louise. Eric, how the hell are you doing?
I have to ask, is it because, again, that we've seen so many other movies like this that you know what's going to happen next? Or is it because this movie is so iconic that we already know the ending and so you're just kind of like, all right, get to it?
I actually don't think it's either. I think it was like the scenes, there's a bunch of scenes when they're in the middle of the desert that just don't make any sense. Like the cop at the towards the end there, right? Like that random state, New Mexico state trooper guy that pulls them over. He served no purpose. Just get him away. Cut that scene out.
Really?
Yeah, because all they get was another gun. That's it, really. They could have done the same damage to that trucker's truck if they had one. You know what I mean? Like, it's just little scenes. I'm not saying I hate this movie, but I'm just saying, like, there's this scenes that just go, oh, my God. I mean, I haven't seen this movie since college, and I don't remember it being this long. What is this, over 2 hours?
Two nine.
Yeah, it did not need to be 2:09. Maybe 1:45.
Sure, I can understand that. Maybe. But, I mean, at that part, like, what scenes would you cut out? Maybe the sex scenes, Jordan, huh? As we were talking about before, maybe the unnecessary love scene.
No, just little scenes like all the cops are watching this romantic movie, and then Shooter McGavin gets upset, turns into football, and all the cops turn back and say switch it or what. I mean, that's to get rid of that, you know.
Sure.
Get rid of some of the lonely night driving scenes that just repeat itself constantly. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be like a scene of them driving, and then Louise would go and look off the distance and then driving.
Okay. Filler.
You know what I mean?
Scenes.
Yeah, like filler stuff. It's just, you just don't need it. I get why Ridley Scott was doing it for a buildup, because he knew and we didn't know at the time as the audience what the ending was going to be. But yeah. Anyway. Thelma Louise, 1991. I did not see this until college. And the only thing that I was told about this, which is totally wrong, but it shows the day and age. Oh, this is that lesbian movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was the stereotype.
Well, yeah. I think that's, a quick throwaway that, you know what, actually, it might support a lot of the theme in this movie here, because it does seem, as a rewatch, I'm glad that I rewatched, because the first time that I had seen this was as a kid during one of, like, those moments where HBO Cinemax was doing the babysitting rather than my parents. And I think they walked in like halfway through it and they're just like, nope. And they, you know, caught me. And then everything after that I had seen in the rebroadcast on you know, TNT or the TV movie special.
Right.
The Melon Farmer special, if you want to give it that.
There's only two scenes that are bad for kids. Other than that, it's okay.
It's just language, really.
Well, I mean, the rape and the sex, I was going to say. I mean, those are not something to watch.
You know, I made a comment earlier that about how Gen Z was saying that, you know, the sex scenes were unnecessary, but I don't know. Brad Pitt and Gina Davis, that was looking pretty good. I think that was actually doing something for me.
I was watching Gina the whole time when Brad Pitt's shirt was off, and it did nothing. And I was like,
for her,
really?
Or for you?
Yeah, for her. And she was like, I was like, nothing, seriously? And she's like, no. I was like, really? She's like, is it doing anything for you? I was like, kinda. I mean, look at those chiseled abs.
Looking good, man. Damn.
He looks better than Fight Club, though. My God. Yeah, Thelma Louise, this movie is iconic. I was IMDb-ing it in 2016. This movie is a part of the Congress National Film Archive as historic, treasure, if you will. Like, it's part of that group.
Yeah, it's culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant.
I don't know why, though. Like, I'm not saying I did not enjoy the movie, but is it because this movie came out when they were not making movies like this, right? 91, 2, that's why?
Because you know, Sarah had that same conversation that it may have been more speaking for the times at 91, and, you know, we're kids at that time, so can't really kind of feel the culture, you know, didn't really have a thing to grasp, what was going on around that time. But I do know that obviously in the 90s, it was a lot of because I look at comedy and like the sitcoms and that were back then. And a lot of it is the difference between male and female, you know, why are women, hey, men are always, you know, and it's always the kind of the same jokes and the same routines that you'd hear back and forth. So I'm wondering if this being the battle of the sexes, why this movie became so popular. Because this was not necessarily a female empowerment movie. It's not really a happy ending whatsoever, but it definitely does give a tone of, well, maybe the position that a lot of women were in at the time, right? Feeling that it's a man's world.
Well, when they get in trouble, I would say, Louise says, you know, we can't go to the police, Thelma. They won't believe us because we're women. Or comment something about that.
Yeah.
Something about, you know. But yeah, no, I mean, like, it was. So I guess if I wish I would have seen this at this age in 91, maybe I would think of it differently. To me, and maybe that's a positive thing, though, too, right? To me, this movie is nothing special, meaning that I don't see that it's doing anything for female kind. You know what I mean? You know, what I'm trying to get at is that I think that we're progressing forward.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is not shocking, right? Like, this is not what would be the equivalent today? Two transgenders on the run?
No. Maybe still of a race relation, if you want to do that type of thing. Where, but then again, because Get Out. I'll compare it to that. Do you remember the ending of Get Out, where after the entire movie, after the main character has gone through like this this horrible experience, and he's at the part where him and Allison Williams, I think, are, is that her name? We're at the street, and you know he's kind of defeated her, and she's all bloody, and then you see the lights, the red and blues, the police come up, and I just remember in that part, because I saw it in theaters, the collective sigh that, or, you know, the gasp, rather, that everyone in the audience had, because they knew culturally that if a cop rolls up, and no matter what the truth is, they see a black man over a beaten white woman, that's not a good look. And that's automatically, you know, kind of going to be, that was the gasp. But where I think in this is the same beat, where two women killed a guy in a parking lot, and no matter what they say, even though his pants are unzipped, and that it's not their word against anyone else's, it's the man's judgment against theirs.
Yeah, I would like to add one thing, and then we can go on with it. I must have seen a different Get Out, because the version I saw was the cop lights were his friend.
Well, yeah, no, I'm saying that because I'm seeing in theaters that first see the lights, everyone gasps because they filled in the rest of the story. But then you see the friend get out, and everyone's just like, you know,
okay,
woo!
I thought there was an alternate ending.
This movie.
Yes. We'll talk about that one at the end. So Thelma and Louise, two friends. What are they in their 20s, 30s? We don't know. They didn't say. I'm going to say early 30s. Probably.
In this movie, I looked, I think Susan Sarandon was 44, and Gina Davis was 31.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's supposed to be their characters, or if that's just you know, they did it, but...
Okay. Because I was going to say, man, it's true. People in the 90s look haggard.
Oh man, back in the day when the wait staff at a diner could smoke.
Yeah, back in the day when you were a freshman in high school and the seniors looked like they were 30.
Dude, that's the first thing that I think I noticed from this is that those diners, when you walk into that Sunday diner and just that fresh kind of hit of tobacco smoke hits you in the face, no matter where you're sitting in the non-smoking section, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, isn't that funny, too? Because I want to talk about this movie, but isn't that funny, too? Like, you would go in a restaurant in the 90s, and it was smoking or non. You're in the same building. You're breathing the same air and the ventilation. Anyway, so Thelma and Louise are best friends, right? Thelma is a housewife to Shooter McGavin, rightfully so, right? Very good. And Louise is a waitress at a diner. I have a question right off the bat. So Thelma is a housewife to Shooter.
Christopher McDonald, by the way.
Yeah, right, but he's Shooter McGavin, and he knows he's Shooter McGavin. I don't want to hear nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? He's almost Don Johnson in Tin Cup at that point. He's a carpet salesman.
Regional manager.
This guy is living large. This guy's house is immaculate. Like, it's horrible, you know, because he's a slob, but it's like, he's a big screen TV, and he has this big house, and he drives around in a Corvette. Like, I'm just like, this guy sells carpets? What am I doing to myself? Jeez, oh, Pete.
Notice, though, that in the details, because Ridley Scott movie, obviously, if it's not going to be a big bang, there's going to be details everywhere else, that a lot of it is that he's spending all of his money on himself.
Yeah, nothing not on her.
Nothing on her. And I think she even makes kind of a comment about that we don't do anything. And, you know, he buys himself a big car, buys himself a big TV. He's wearing gold all in his ring, you know, and just everywhere.
I would buy a carpet from that guy.
Well, of course, that hair was immaculate as well. Actually, everyone's hair was immaculate in this movie. Can I just say that? Like, Gina Davis, that hair was looking great. Susan Sarandon, that hair is always...
Something was going on with me and Susan Sarandon. Like, I don't know what's going on with me and Susan right now. Her and I need to have a conversation. It's like, for some reason, you're really attractive, and I don't know why.
I'm confused. I tell you, when she got rid of the lipstick and got rid of like the scarf, is like, oh man, this is the wife beater.
She put the cold rag like around her neck,
little ascot, if you want to call it.
Oh my god, I don't know why. Fun fact, because
she's free, she's an independent woman,
hairs down, free. Fun fact, IMDb fun fact: the scene when Shooter McGavin's leaving the house and he goes to his Corvette. You have these two people outside working, doing landscaping or whatever, and he slips and falls. That was not scripted. He actually slipped and fell. And if you go back and watch the reaction, the woman that was in the scene, like the gardener or whatever, she was shaking a little bit because she legitimately was freaked out because he was staying in character, freaking out.
He is a good actor, man.
He slips and falls. Hey, hey, I eat pieces of like you for breakfast.
He is such a good actor. I think he's got great range too. Not often we see him as the bad guy. It's the villain, right?
No, I mean no disrespect to the guy. It's just, you know, our age is just Shooter McGavin. That's who this guy is to me. You know, he will always will be Shooter McGavin.
But I you know what? That's the beauty of him is that he's overacting. You know? No,
it's amazing. Yeah. No, I have a question. I have a serious question. So we never get to see their relationship really, right? So we get to see Thelma and her talk a little bit. And he's kind of – Thelma, to him, in my opinion, is put on the shelf and I'll take you off the shelf when I need you, right? He never strikes me as physically abusive. He doesn't strike me as verbally abusive. He just strikes me as a dimwit. Would you agree with me or would you disagree with me? Because not once has – Thelma said that he's hit her or he's called her stupid.
No, of course
he says
not.
He's just an idiot.
Well, I actually kind of hate to say it that both Daryl and Thelma are kind of simple folk, if we can kind of say like that. Yeah, very, very naive, very gullible people. But yeah, no, I would agree that he makes her a trophy. He's very materialistic. The gold, the car, the TV, and the pretty wife too. That's his thing, is that he's just collecting what he thinks is valuable things and never appreciates or anything. And not until we get glimpses later on that he's just like, oh geez, what happened to this woman? You know, I think we get that little glimpse of him breaking down. I don't feel bad for him whatsoever. Obviously he made his bed, he has to lie in it.
No, I don't feel bad for him at all either. But also, too, another reason why I think that these two are dim-witted, if you will, is because I think Thelma made a comment to Brad Pitt later that she's only been with him. They're high school sweethearts. Mm-hmm. And they're in their 30s, let's say, now. So they've been together for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, so. But this is another thing that's strange. Now, I will say this. This is a sexist comment of me, and I'm saying this for a reason. Thelma and Louise have a plan to where they're just going to go on a fishing trip because Louise's friend is getting divorced and he's given his cabin, right? And they have all their fishing poles and everything. The reason why I'm saying my comment, I believe Louise is a fisherwoman. I believe that, right? She has that grudge. She has that grit on her, right? You know what I mean? Like, look at me. Do I look like I fish? No. No, I get my nails done. You know what I mean?
You get a manicure.
Right. I don't believe Thelma fishes. She just seems buffoonery and bubbly and not really. I mean, she takes out this huge net, right? And she just doesn't know where to put the net.
She takes a lantern and a gun with her to her fishing trip.
Right. You know, like, it just. I mean, so I guess sexist is the wrong word. I guess I'm just trying to say, like, I don't believe these women are going fishing. I believe Louise is going fishing. I believe Thelma's just.
I think, again, kind of shows the relationship that Louise is more of the tough, independent type who makes decisions. And
right.
Thelma is just the one that kind of goes along with everything.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm trying to say, so I apologize for my statement. It's just
you got there. I get it.
Yeah, I got there. Sorry, people that are listening. It's early in the morning. So they're going on a fishing trip, and of course, the whole big thing on the way to the trip was, you know, Louise was saying, did you tell, what's his name, Daryl Shooter?
Okay. Yep, Daryl.
She's like, nope, I put a microwave dinner in, and I put a note and a beer. Like, it's just like, I'm leaving.
And again, we show that relationship a bit more when later on that evening, when she tries to give him a call after all the events have happened and the dinner's untouched, the beer's untouched, the note's unread. He's not even home.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So that just kind of shows.
He was out.
He's out doing God knows what. You know what? It's so tempting to slip into the Arkansas accent that these girls do.
Yeah.
Daryl's out there doing God knows what.
Yes, it is hard. I found myself going to bed going, well, dag nabbit, you know.
That and I'll say the soundtrack was banging on this too.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, well, okay. Aside from Hans Zimmer, I was going to say the actual like soundtrack of like jukebox plays, but Hans Zimmer basically just has that 90s, that classic blues guitar.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, geez.
I wish you did Lethal Weapon. That would have been great.
Oh, man. Just
that'll be great.
Yeah.
So you know, Thelma's like, hey, Louise, let's go over to this bar called the Silver Bucket. Let's just go and have fun and hang out. You know, she's like, no, Thelma, we got to get going. No, let's just go and have fun. And then they go to this, God, like Ricky Bobby would be at this bar. Like, this is my kind of bar. Eric, you've been to bars that I like. This is my kind of place.
Oh,
besides the raping.
No, yeah, obviously. No, but when I was in Kalamazoo, I was with some locals, Portage, Michigan, and we went to a bar just like this where it was basically a barn. And like people rode their horses up instead of their cars. Mm-hmm. And man, it was flashbacks of this, you know. All the tables are different just because it's like they're donated picnic tables that they were able to get.
Donated from the
line dancing. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Some local band that should be good, but it's not good. You know what I mean? Like, it's good enough to actually get a country hit, but you look at them like they're haggard.
Listen, if your hair is over your shoulders or shorter than your shoulders, then get out of the band.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. And like the waitress, can I top you off? Like just beautiful Marlboro cowboy Camel cigarette logos everywhere, like just hole in the wall dirt. I'm sure Sir Ridley Scott had a great time in Midwestern America, because this is all trucker town.
Yeah, it is just something classic 90s Americana about this piece right here too.
I enjoyed this. I mean, you can tell I'm smiling because it's just wow. Like, these don't exist. I mean, they do, but they don't anymore. You know, like,
they're hard to find. I could tell you that just because the way the times have changed. But yeah, just the way I could smell this scene.
You could smell the smoke. You could smell the vomit. You could smell it. Like, I mean, you wore it on you.
Yeah, exactly. You knew you were at the bar because you could, you know, those few times when you wake up smelling like yesterday, and it's like, I know what bar you were at.
Yeah, you're at the Silver Bucket. So then I am pissed at Thelma. And the reason why I'm pissed at Thelma is that she's just like, I'm letting my hair down. I'm going to get a shot of wild turkey is what she's always said. Wild turkey.
Coke back.
With the Coke, you know, and then Luis is like, fine, I'll have a margarita, right? And I get that Thelma just wanted to let loose and have fun because she clearly did not get a chance to soil whole wild oats. But you don't say yes to the first guy that comes up to you. Like, my wife told me that rule. Like, the first guy that comes up to you, you don't ever say yes to that guy, right? Yeah, and the first guy that comes up to her, he's like, hey, you want to dance? Hey, or do you like to have a drink? No. No, I don't.
What kind of accent was that?
I don't do accents. You know, stupid, right? So then I don't want to drag this on. I don't want to go up scene by scene, but pretty much this guy,
Harlan Puckett.
This guy's a drunken ass. And, you know, Thelma's not feeling good because he's doing it on purpose, by the way. I actually rewound the scene. So he was spinning her once or twice, right? That's fine, right?
It's
right.
Like a, but then it's like an alligator.
Right, but then all of a sudden he just spins her again and spins her again and keeps on spinning her. And I'm just like, oh, this is his game. Right? I mean, like, this has worked before for him to where they don't feel good, and takes her outside. And that you want to talk about feeling the scene in the bar. I felt this. This was a very visual rape scene. I mean, you saw stuff. And I was like, oh, God, no.
Yeah.
He felt so bad for Thelma.
Yeah, it got abusive real quick. Obviously it got real ugly real fast, and that's kind of speaks to what it is. The visual was disturbing, but it was necessary just to kind of show you really what it is. Props to everyone acting. I know that it's got to be a very uncomfortable scene to shoot. I hope the actor who played Harlan gave Gina Davis some flowers after or something.
I can buy myself flowers. The guy was such a sleaze, too, right? So he puts her on the hood of the car, right? And he touches her. She goes, no. And he goes, I just want a kiss, darling, you know? And then he goes in for a kiss, and she's like, no. And he's like, I'm not going to hurt you. And then sucker punches her. Like, that's an oxymoron statement right there. I ain't going to hurt you. Pow. Right? And then she's like, what are you doing? He's like, I ain't going to hurt you. I'm laughing because it's like, God, this guy, learn when you are not going to have fun. Like, you just punched this girl, and you're saying, I ain't going to hurt you?
Yeah.
Jeez, oh, Pete. And then here comes Luis in her Batman cape and cowl, right? Put the gun to his
head.
You know, She knew. Now, this is your opinion, not law, your opinion. They walk away, right? And then the guy says some choice words to the ladies, and Luis just hates being down. This guy deserves it, in her opinion. Pulls the trigger, one shot in the chest, done. She's guilty of murder, right?
Yeah, flat out. I don't think there's anyone that would argue, you know, whether it was deserved or not, it was still murder. I get that.
Thelma would have gotten off.
Yes. Well, she could have been guilty by association. It depends on the court, and, you know, there are in Oklahoma City, or they're in Arkansas still, maybe?
They're in Arkansas, yeah.
So, I mean, I'd imagine that court's not going to look too kindly on a simple housewife.
I don't know, because after this, a few scenes later, we get the amazing Harvey Keitel, this local detective, if you will, and he seemed like he gave a crap. He seemed like he believed.
I think he knew. When questioning Lena, the waitress, she gave basically the whole character, you know, kind of I guess witness to what she could, mm-hmm. saying that, no, this guy Harlan, it's like, oh, it could have been a number of, you know, people that killed this guy. It could have been an angry housewife, could have been an angry husband, you know, like this guy obviously had his a reputation. Wife. Yeah, it could have been his wife. He obviously, if he had it coming one way or another, because he's a douche. He's just that kind of guy. And so I think that gave Hal enough to know that in this situation, if it was that, it could have been deserved. Right. He was doing something. It wasn't just an innocent thing where he was right. just, you know, oh, you need a light of the cigarette? No, he was obviously doing something that mm-hmm. got him in that position. So I think Hal, being the good detective, what he was or what he is, pieced that together.
Yeah. So then they go on the run a little bit, right? And
they freak out.
They both freak out. Luis freaks out. And then they get a chance to go to a hotel the next that day and kind of like just figure things out, try to get her head clean. And Luis is like, hey, I have $6,700, which I can't believe she has $6,700 in 1991 as a waitress. That's pretty good. She said it was her life savings. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot, especially for 91.
Back then. Yeah, for 91, that's pretty big. And then she, out of nowhere, I forgot he was in this movie, another Tarantino-ite. She calls her boyfriend, Michael Madsen.
Jimmy.
Looking chiseled and amazing. I was waiting for him to say, are you going to bark all day, little doggy? Or are you going to bite? I love that he was in this movie. Like this, like him and Harvey Keitel is just such early 90s grit. You know what I mean?
These are both characters. These are both actors that look like they were born 55 years old.
Yeah. Like
no matter how, anywhere they are. By the way, after we watched The Last Temptation of Christ, Harvey Keitel has almost been ruined for me, by the way.
Harvey Keitel was in The Last Temptation of... Oh, he was, yes.
Jesus, come on. Yeah, I'm trying to help you out here.
He was not in the right movie. No, that was not his fault. That
it's me, your friend
fault.
Judas with the red hair.
That was Scorsese trying to be something that he was.
I get it, but it's I can't get it out of my head now.
I remember when we reviewed that. God, that was like 4 years ago, bud.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so I mean, I am a Michael Madsen fan. So I mean, from the movies that I've seen him in, were you happy to see him?
Oh yeah, of course. I wanted to see him do a little dance, a little sidestep. That would have been pretty fun to the Joker. That would have been pretty fun.
You know what's hilarious is that this movie came out in 91, and 2 years later, he was saving a giant mammal called Free Willy. What was he doing in that movie? Right.
Oh wow, yeah, that's right. Man, he was all over the place.
He was the foster dad, and then in 02, 03, he's doing Kill Bill. Now, less than 10 years, he goes from the skinny, chiseled kind of looking dude to this flappy, like 10 years of Skull and Budweiser and Campbell's has really hit this guy.
Dude, but like the 90s were so weird. Because remember like that part when like, remember when swing was popular in the 90s for a bit?
Yeah. Yeah, like the mid 90s. Yeah.
Yeah,
like and swing, like, the ska.
Yeah, and like rockabilly. Mm-hmm. I feel like this guy kind of, you know, was kind of almost like a good interpretation of that. You know, bowling shirts were popular, and this guy could wear nice. A bowling shirt.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say this just to say it off my chest. My Jordans thing. I believe that there were three periods of the 90s. I don't believe every decade has that, but I feel the 90s did. And this is the 90s that I like. Like, you got, like, 90 to, like, 94, right? Everything was kind of dark, a little gritty, right? The people were dark and gritty, mm-hmm. right? They just had this grit. You got your line dancing, you know, you got your bowling shirts, right? And then, like 95 to, like, 97, you had, like, this Hootie and the Blowfish, like, Dave Matthews frat kind of, like, ska kind of thing in between, you know, like, just, like, you know, like, Alanis Morissette was ironic. You know, you had, like this college
alternative, strip. Right?
Right. And then in the late 90s, it was flashy and bright colors and jelly bracelets and juicy, you know, and like it just completely different from what it was in the beginning. And I'm saying this because I like this 90s. This is the 90s that I like.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So she wants Michael Madsen to wire her her $6,700. She won't tell him what's going on. At the end, it doesn't really matter that she doesn't tell him or doesn't tell him, does or does not tell him. But he doesn't wire the money. They meet at Oklahoma. Well, no. So then the next scene is this is where we get an unknown Brad Pitt out of nowhere as a drifter cowboy who says he's a college student and he needs a ride.
Yep.
To Oklahoma City. And I have a question about Thelma. Thelma, how long is this movie? Like, not even a week, right? It's like 4 days, 5 days?
Something like that?
Because here's my point.
It's got to be less than a week. Yeah, you're right.
Because she meets, the women meet Brad Pitt, right?
Yes.
The next day.
Yeah.
So for Thelma, I'm just asking, for Thelma to be googly-eyed over him, she was 24 hours raped. Like, her character doesn't make sense to me at this part.
I think it's, you're right. But I think at the same part of it, she's, because she's only had attention from Daryl. And it feels like she's been just kind of kept in the house for the most part. And I think that she has a good nature about her. And she is willing to appeal to that good nature. Also, I think that she's easily flattered because, again, the only attention that she's gotten is from Daryl. And so when she gets attention from Harlan or she gets attention from this guy, what's his name, JD?
JD.
Yeah, she's doesn't know how to say no. She's flattered because, you know, she's not used to this compliment here. Now, it goes to show that with those three men, Daryl, Harlan and JD, all three of these guys do wrong by her. Like they do something, they take advantage of her completely, and I think that's eventually her breaking point.
Yeah, she breaks after that. Do you remember I showed you? Well, I didn't show you because you've seen it before. But remember one of our old retrospectives with Sarah? We did True Romance.
Yeah, I'm not gonna forget that one, Jordan. I watched it with my mom. Yes.
Thank you. I love that movie. 92 was when that came out. Brad Pitt was the stoner on the couch, and this was 91.
Again, I feel...
You know what I mean? Like, that. Brad Pitt had a bigger part in this movie. How does that work? Like, how do you go from this sexy cowboy to a stoner on a couch?
Because, like, again, I feel like he was acting wonderful in this movie, and I said it before in the True Romance one. I don't think he was acting. I think that they just rolled up on the set one day, and Brad was just sitting on the couch, and they're like, "Well, we'll just film around him."
Yeah, well, listen.
No. You go ahead and just stay there. We'll just do your thing. We're just gonna film around you.
Yeah. So Brad Pitt is great in this. Fun IMDb fact: George Clooney was on a flight 16 years after this movie was released, and just so happened to sit next to Susan Sarandon. And he said, "Do you know that I auditioned multiple times for Brad Pitt's part but never got it?" And Susan Sarandon said, "You auditioned?" Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, George Clooney could have, I don't know, something about Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt has this world that these people live in, right? This Arkansas, Oklahoma world. Brad Pitt fits in this world. The way he looks. George Clooney's too pretty.
I think there's well, first off, George Clooney's jaw with Gina Davis's jawline, they're going to start a fire with that. They're going to, it's too sharp of a jawlines to be together in one room. Can't even fit those things through the doorway. I'll tell you right now. Brad Pitt, I think in young Brad Pitt, has this believable character role where, you know, that smile is just like, hey, I'm here to have a good time, but I'm also confident enough. You know what? A River Runs Through It. I feel like that's the same kind of character.
Okay.
You know, where I don't want to go Legends of the Fall completely, but, you know, where it's he plays younger brother so well.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is kind of what that role is.
No, I really enjoy it. Now, of course, we all know, if you haven't seen the movie, we all know that something's up with JD. You don't believe him because the guy always seems to be around, right? So then Michael Madsen gives Luis the money because he flies, right? He flies two states over to meet her, surprises her, Peaches, right? And then they have their talk. And then, again, being naive, Luis says to Thelma, here's the money in this brown envelope. Keep it by the bed. Don't do nothing.
Yeah.
Do nothing. So here comes Brad Pitt knocking on the door. Rain is happy. Does he know? He doesn't know that they have money. But he was stalking, right? I mean, how would he know? Because they drop him off and they go to another hotel. So he had to have followed them, right?
Well, I think he got the whiff the first time when he was right in the back. And remember when Louise saw the cops coming and she kind of,
darted,
went off. Yeah, exactly. And so he's like, oh, you got yourself a little bit of trouble. So, you know, the devil knows their own, right? And so I think maybe he didn't know for sure, but when he's left in the room alone, I bet you he just went rifling through some stuff and found himself a jackpot.
Do you think that he actually liked Thelma? I think he actually did like Thelma.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But at the same part, his priority wasn't to get himself a girl. His priority was to take the money and run.
Right, right. So so Thelma's left alone, and she finally has sex with Brad Pitt, which is what she needed, right? She needed that moment, right?
Well, we all needed that moment.
We all needed that moment. And Luis stays the night with Michael Madsen. It's assumed that they had sex as well. But anyway, Thelma goes downstairs at this another diner that I just love this part of Americana. And just these diners, these women. And this is where Brad Pitt steals the $6,700. And I think this is where, like you were saying, where Thelma snaps and becomes the Thelma that she needs to become, right? This is her Darth Vader moment. This is when she gets her cape because she's the one that gets tough. Luis is just broken, crying, our money's gone. And Luis is like, no, I'm sorry. And then Thelma's like, come on, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Because we find out before the sex scene with Brad Pitt that he is a robber. He doesn't rob banks. He robs convenience stores. And he tells her how to do it.
Yep.
So she takes her, and then this is where the movie goes from two girls, innocent, kind of not innocent, to just plain out fugitives, right? Because this is where they pull over the side of the road. And the nicest robber in the world, Thelma, goes in the convenience store. All right, now, y'all, come here now. Go on, lay down. Give me all that money now. All right, ma'am, lay down.
I'd like to have your attention, everybody, please. Yeah.
I loved it. And this is where the security footage happens. Daryl finds out, and now these women are running from the law. So,
well, this is another hard part of it too is when later on when Hal's talking, the inspector Harvey Keitel, and he says, "You're not wanted for murder. You're wanted for questioning." But now that we have evidence, now we have hard evidence of Thelma robbing a store. Mm-hmm. Now we want to bring you in. Now you're wanted.
Yeah, now you're wanted. But still, though, they probably would have given her a slap on the wrist. Not meaning she wouldn't have served time, but they would have definitely punished Thelma, but not to the extent they would have done Luis. Luis killed the guy.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, again, wanted for questioning, is that a lot of this time after this, we are kind of hinted at that something happened to Luis in Texas.
Right. What do you think happened to her in Texas? They don't say.
Yeah. I think that something similar happened to her. I think that she was... Didn't Thelma kind of give her prediction later on in New Mexico that I think that when she was laughing, she said, I think what happened in Texas is that you got raped in Texas and something similar happened here. So I think that piece together for me is that maybe something traumatic like there happened to Louise in Texas, whether she killed a guy or not, who knows. But when going back to the bar scene, that look that she gives Harlan after he said that, it's like, oh, I should have done that type of saying those words. I think that those regressed memories kind of came back to, you know, those moments where she's probably relived the situation over and over again of what should I have done? What could I have done over and over again? And she had the power, the gun in her hand. And she let that emotion take over. She said, right. You know what? This is for that time in Texas, and this is for everyone else that didn't get to the chance. I'm doing it now. I'm taking control. And she shot Harlan for that justice. So I think maybe that's what happened.
I 100% agree with you. I don't think she actually killed a guy, because if she would have killed a guy before in Texas, I think she reacted a little bit differently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like riding a bike, you don't forget, right? She wouldn't have freaked out the way that she was freaking out.
Well, she seemed to know how everything worked. She seemed to know how the phone tapping would work. And she seemed to know when Thelma was calling Daryl, like if he, you know, if you get any whiff of, which is a nice little comedy part of this movie, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if he sounds off, you just hang up.
Well, she probably saw Terminator, because Terminator 2 did that. Call your foster parents.
Man, you are not good at accents.
No, I'm terrible. What's the name of the dog? You know, like, come on. No. And it was funny, too, that actually was a funny little bit where she calls. She's like, well, hell, Thelma, how you doing? And she hangs up. And
he knows.
And he's like, all I did was say hello.
Women love that.
Women love giving the flowers. This is the part after the convenience store scene. This is the part where I was telling you in the beginning, I was telling that they needed a cut, because it's just driving from here on out. There's no hotel rooms. There's no fun characters that they meet, possibly the cop. But, like, it's just driving and desert from here on out.
I would think that they didn't need the biker smoking the huge spliff joint there, running up and getting the cop out of the car.
That was unnecessary. That made no sense. It took me out of the movie.
Well, yeah, as funny as it was for him blowing the smoke in the cop car. But yeah, it really didn't need that, because we're just going to assume that he leaves him in there. If that's the case, we didn't need that scene at all, because
we don't know.
We could just assume automatically that he's going to get rescued. But they threw the keys out, you know, it's like just, yeah, exactly. It was not needed. You could have saved 5 minutes from the movie on that.
Right. The reason I was complaining about it earlier was, okay, so the girls are driving and this cop comes because they were going 100 miles an hour. He doesn't know anything about their escapades, right? He just pulls them over because they're going 100 miles an hour. And he's just, this guy's funny. This actor is funny, because I don't know if you noticed, but he was like this tough aviator glasses, you know, sheriff guy, right? Get out of the car, ma'am. Let's go. You know, and they do their thing. And then as soon as Thelma pulls a gun on him, he starts to cry.
And he starts to shoot.
I got a wah. And it was like, this guy, right? And then my wife makes a good point. They put him in the trunk of the car and they throw the keys away. And my wife goes, that could be murder right there. And I said, how was that? And my wife goes, they put him in the trunk in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
He's going to probably die of heat exhaustion.
Yeah, Sarah said the same thing.
I was like, that's a good point. And out of nowhere, this stereotypical Jamaican biker.
Yeah. Come on. What is he doing riding his bike in the middle of the desert like that? Jeez.
Makes no sense. There's nobody around. This guy is such a stereotype. He should have been listening to Bob Marley. I want to be jamming with you.
Yeah, you may as well.
It was terrible. That whole thing needed to be cut. And I guess knowing the end of the movie, they're driving at night, and then Louise pulls over to the side of the road, and she has that look of looking out on the sunrise, and she has this moment to herself. And I'm thinking, okay, this is because by afternoon, they will be gone.
Yeah.
So maybe she kind of had an inkling, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what that scene was for. I think that was pointless.
I think when you reflect like that, it's more the character realizing that the finish line is more of a mirage now, right? Like they went onto this and they're thinking like this is not good. They're at a part right now where, you know, Thelma's awake, right? I've never been more awake in my life.
That was interesting.
And they're leaving a trail of destruction behind them now.
Yes, they are. So one more scene before the destruction is another scene that needed to be cut that I don't understand. They go to this watering hole, if you will. Kind of reminds me Red Dead Redemption 2, right? This local, like, just nothing of a shack with water that they just wash up on, right? And there's nothing around.
Yeah.
Right? And there's this old guy with a beard, and she just sits to him, and she takes off – Louise takes out her earrings and her watch and gives it to him. And the next scene is she has his hat. Was that the trade?
It could be. I took that more as, and same with Thelma in this too, is them kind of shedding their old self and into their new skin. She's taking off all the jewelry that would have represented who Louise was in Arkansas. And she's now kind of transformed into this, you know, that Susan Sarandon character that we're just like, oh my, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It just is this in control kind of woman with a gun on the run. Thelma also, by the way, too, wasn't a smoker in the start of this, and now she is smoking. And now she's drinking heavily too.
All day drinking Wild Turkey. Also, I noticed that she had this denim button-down shirt, and she got a little sassy with tying it up, you know, by her stomach. Like, these girls are – well, I'm saying that for a reason. Like, these girls are completely different characters than what they were at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
They were mouse – nah, Louise wasn't mousy, but Thelma was mousy, unsure of herself, and now she's awake. I wish, if you noticed the watch and the earrings, the amazing early 90s turquoise, I wish that came back. But now this is the climax of the movie, right? So this is where, Harvey Keitel and everybody's chasing him at this point, right? Is that no?
No, what happened? We're there. They sell that. They blow up the trucker.
Yeah, let's talk about that guy for 1 second. This guy throughout the whole movie, it was supposed to be a running gag, I guess, where every time they passed the same trucker, he would do obscene hand gestures and stuff to the women. So they finally said, yeah, pull over, come on over, right? And this guy's an idiot. And men, my one swear for the episode, if you think you're going to control women and women say, come over here, and then they point a gun at you, don't call them bitches. Because they're going to blow up your truck. Just say, yes, ma'am. Sorry, ma'am. Hey, just get back in your truck and go. Like, this was amazing. Unnecessary. Unnecessary blow-up scene, but it was great. It was fun.
I tell you, the balls on some people to talk that trash with a gun pointed at you.
Right?
No matter who it is, it's like, unless you've had a gun pointed at you before, or you can, this is not the movies. You get a gun pointed at you, in real life, you usually either just shut up. It's the flight or freeze response, mm-hmm. right there too.
Mm-hmm.
And most always people are just going to freeze and be like, okay, well, what can I do to get you to stop pointing that gun at me? Yeah. And it's not going to double down on the slander, and the insults there.
I have a running joke before we get into the end. I have a running joke in my personal life with Gina. To where Gina knows that I'm not dim-witted. You know, she knows I'm not stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes I see a moment and I have to take it to where when I say these things, she looks at me with just, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, you can't be this way. I'll give you an example that I'll tell you about this movie. I was wearing a windbreaker one day, right? And I was driving and the windows were down and I put my elbow out the, you know, when I was driving and I went, huh. Look at that. And she went, what? The wind is breaking my windbreaker. Instant hatred. Instant. Right?
Listen, you're a dad. You're allowed to make those jokes.
No, this was when we were dating.
Oh, then yeah. This was years ago. Kick you out of the car.
Right. No, I was in my 20s. So the same moment happened again, right? We're watching the movie last night. And they blow up the guy's
such
truck.
Such a dumb joke, Jordan.
Right? No, that's why I have to do it. Anyway, so they blow up the guy's truck, and they're spinning around, and they're going, yay, right? And they're doing all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at my wife, and I go, oh, I get it. It's Bonnie and Clyde.
That's what I was thinking
and
of.
And she was like, God, fist, face, bloody nose. Like, I hate you. Ridley Scott said he studied Badlands to prepare for this movie.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know. So, now, the climax. They're being chased. We got helicopters, right? And I don't know, forgive me, but anytime I see a helicopter in the desert, I think of Broken Arrow, and I'm sorry.
Okay.
Bum, 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 bum.
You're not far off from that.
Right.
A lot of dust kicking up here, too, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they made it to the Grand Canyon, right? And they're just... What are we going to do, Thelma? I don't know what we're going to do, Luis, you know? And they share each other a kiss. This does not mean that they're lesbians, people. If you're still on that, they're not. This is two human beings that know that they're going to commit suicide, and they're just embracing each other for 1 second. I didn't take this as a lesbian
thing. Not at all.
This was just two friends that, you know. So I have a question. This is the debate. So they drive off. Harvey Keitel's trying to chase them. No! Hits the gas, flies off. Freezes, movie ends. I think it's better that we didn't see the destruction. Do you agree or do you disagree?
No, absolutely. I think the problem with a lot of movies nowadays too is that you are able to, through camera work, leave a lot for the imagination.
Right.
Make me, you know, I would love for you to give me more of, again, let me figure it out on my own. I think that's why a lot of movies, like superhero movies, kind of suck a little bit more, just because they need to have things spelled out for you. They need to have these kind of character narratives where they talk, and you know, the third person in their apartment just like, well, why would I do this? Well, maybe it's because it's like, what are you talking? No one talks like that to yourself, but you're doing it to you know, obviously fill
audience.
In, yeah, to fill in kind of the parts, you know, just like, why would it do that? Maybe it's because you know, this and that and the other. It's like, well, you don't need to talk like that. Mm-hmm. And let, you know, tell the story inform the viewer, rather than it being completely like just someone opening a book and reading to me as if I was, you know, in kindergarten again.
So what's the alternate ending?
The alternate ending is, as they're riding through to jump off the cliff, Louise kicks Thelma out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And she rides off the cliff herself, saving Thelma.
Do you like or do you dislike that?
Dislike. You know, it's definitely more poetic that they both ride off that thing together.
Why did they have to do this, though? That's my question that I was left with last night. I went to bed, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, from all the things, but they wouldn't have gone in jail for the rest of their lives.
No,
I mean, why?
Probably not. I thought that too. Like, what was happening here? And I think it's because they both realize if they do go willingly and they you know, get tried and everything else like that, what life are they going back to?
Well, they'll be in jail for probably 10, 15 years, and then, I mean, Daryl will not be around. He'll be selling some carpet to some floozy, right? And then they'll just, I guess you're right, right? They would be on parole, and it would be.
Yeah,
it would not,
like,
be.
Yeah, what kind of life is that, where they're gonna go and they're gonna have a lot of other men make the decisions for them of what kind of life they're destined to live, or, I don't know, not destined, but you know, they will have their life decided for them, and
right, and
I think that they get this piece of like, well, this is our decision,
right? They don't want to go back to it. Also, I feel that they kind of got addicted to it, because in that moment towards the end of the movie, when Thelma says, I feel awake, like, I mean, I feel that these women would continue to do this destruction. I don't think that they're going around killing people like Bonnie and Clyde or like from Natural Born Killers,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, they weren't doing that. They're not looking for trouble. They were kind of like justice warriors, if you will.
Yeah.
Right? Only trouble they really did was the robbing of the convenience store, right?
That was the big one. Them running probably wasn't a good look.
Now the FBI is involved because they're crossing state lines, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's where you get, what's his name's, Max, Stephen Tobolowsky, the bald guy, really getting into it. And again, going against Hal's word, being like, hey, stop. Don't bring all the heat into this, because we know that that's going to not end well.
I think I also think that's another reason why the women jumped too. Like, I think if it was Harvey Keitel and maybe one or two other cops, maybe it wouldn't have been so, hey, if you guys come with us, you're done, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think of there's a type of movie that reminded me of this. I'm trying to find it, man. Is it Baby Boy with Tyrese?
Are you serious?
It was a Bonnie and Clyde type movie. I could have swore it was with like Tyrese and Megan Good, where they were just running around kind of robbing banks and, you know.
You're talking about In Time? with Justin Timberlake?
No.
My wife and I have that as our guilty pleasure movie.
I'm sure it is. It Queen and Slim? Is that? No.
That sounds terrible.
I gotta find this thing, man. Oh, it's the newer one. Damn it! What is that movie? Oh, why is it not? Go ahead. I'm gonna find it as soon as we end this podcast. By the way, too.
We gotta do a popcorn ratings on this one. This one's a large for me. This is the second best one I feel that we reviewed, right? Because I like Lethal Weapon. Oh, by the way, everybody who's listening, this is part of our buddy series. Thelma Louise is not two dudes, but they're definitely buddies.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So it's part of our buddy series. So I think I've said everything I wanted to say. I think I have my gripes. I think this movie could be an hour and 45. I think a lot of the desert driving scenes could have been trimmed down a little bit. I liked the world that we were at. I like this Ricky Bobby, Midwest American, dirty, dusty, grimy. I don't know why. It's very interesting world. I probably will see it again in another 20 years, right? But I have nothing really to complain about it. I think it's a solid movie, and I think it deserves the recognition that it gets. So, yeah, Thelma Louise for me is a large. Eric, what's your popcorn rating for Thelma Louise?
You know, I'm trying to figure out if there's any bad parts of the movie, but, like, for the most part, it told a complete story. Really, like, from front to back, it kind of did what it was supposed to do. Any gripe that I have is maybe small and few in between. And it's not really, like, maybe a little bit more of showing Hal the detective as being kind of the good guy, as him understanding a bit more. Or showing, because Jimmy was a real good guy in this. Jimmy was a stand-up guy.
Michael Madsen?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, he delivered for Louise and didn't ask any questions. He got a little angry when, obviously, she was keeping information from him. But at the same part, he's ride or die, just kind of. I feel like this is almost like a role reversal type of thing, you know, where we've seen the movie where it's the two outlaws who are the guys running away. And, you know, they asked, you know, their wives and everybody's like, hey, baby, you need to come bring that money to us in Oklahoma City. And I like this take of it. I enjoyed the ending of it. I think it was poetic. I think this ends a message. The movie itself did a good job of not only telling the story, but delivering a message of the time and just the maybe of the misogyny that was prevalent in the age. I could see why this is in the Library of Congress as preserved. And I understand that. I do. I guess I'll give it a large. At the same part, like, I don't know. I think, you know what bothered me is, and the more I think about it, is that there was a moment where after they killed Harlan, where it's like, oh, I feel like you could have gotten away with this.
Yeah, they could have.
I feel like you could have just drove off and you could have just easily gotten away with this. And I feel like they did more to incriminate themselves further than anything else. And I think that's maybe what bothered me a little bit more, because I think wasn't it more that... not necessarily that it was the notable car, but it was that the money transferred set off the alarm a bit more. But because I don't know how Hal was able to really track them as easily as he did. It seemed like
couldn't. They didn't know where they were until they found the robbing footage of her doing the convenience store. Then they found out where they were.
Before that, though, he was.
They didn't know, I thought.
I didn't think so either, but no, if you go back, he kind of finds a bit more that they identify the FBI, finds there was a 1966 Ford Thunderbird, and the police tap into the Daryl's phone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happens after or before all the robbing and stuff like that. They tap the phone.
Mulligan. That's a mulligan at that point.
Yeah, so I think that
the movie deserves it.
Maybe a little bit of that was like, maybe more of a Hal being the good detective and being like, you know, hey, I understand your story. I think that would have put to a lot more on emphasis on kind of the story, with having the one guy just like, I believe you, you know, don't do this type of thing, you know. But he's the one investigator. He's the one cop that sees it, whereas that whole fleet of cops who are armed and ready to go are ready to shoot first, ask questions later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much what drove him over the edge, no pun intended. Also, in Movie Guy's world, we didn't see a body. No body, no death, bud.
That's right. They're still flying to this day.
Or they graciously landed in the water below.
Yeah,
that they could got be. They, no body, no death.
Listen, that's a that's a T-bird, baby.
Hey,
that thing's a tank.
If that jerk off bad guy in Rebel Moon could fall 100 stories onto a metal thing or whatever and survive, Thelma Louise could survive too.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'm just saying.
This is that's a classic movie though, and the other part of it is like that's an iconic scene, right?
Yes.
We've had so many movies that have parodied it. We're comparing other movies to something like this. It's a Ridley Scott movie.
Yeah, this was before his career went down.
Oh yeah.
This was after Gladiator. Tell me one thing he's made that's good.
Martian.
Did he do that, or was it a produced? No, come on. He's horrible. He's horrible. He destroyed Alien. He destroyed his own creation. No. Robin Hood.
American Gangster?
American Gangster was not that great, and you know that wasn't. It was okay. That was a Denzel Washington movie, if anything. You know what I mean?
Black Hawk Washington, Down?
That wasn't that good. You know that.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, you're fine. I get it.
I got nothing else to say about it.
No, it's plain and simple what it is. I feel like a lot of these movies that we've been doing recently, at least for me, there's like this fine line between medium and large, and
right.
I kind of go one way or the other just because of the influence that it provides. You know, where like Saltburn, I give a medium just because I feel like there's the one scene that's, and also the incomplete story that I wanted more. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted a lot more from that character. Whereas in this one, I feel like we got a lot from the characters. That we got a huge, beautiful arc from both of them. But I wanted more from the side characters on this one. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the story was a lot more impactful than that other movie. And where I feel like I gave Hereditary a large bag just because of the amount of detail was in that. I could rewatch that movie and catch something new every time. This one, watched it once as an adult. I get the message. It's pretty loud and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like how that part in Texas is still a mystery. You don't quite know, but
you don't know.
You got enough to where
you know what happened.
It's well, just the acting was solid from Susan Sarandon on this too. I think, yeah, it's really the other part of it is just solid acting from everyone. Mm-hmm.
I agree,
including Shooter McGavin.
I love Shooter. Oh my God, I love Shooter. Thank you everybody so much for downloading this most recent episode of Movie Guys Podcast. Movie Guys Podcast. You can check us out at movieguyspodcast.podme.com or wherever you get your podcast from. We are on. Thank you, Eric, so much for joining me. We'll be back Thursday for another awesome episode. Have a good night.
Maybe.
That's the only thing I'm confirming it to, right? Because Orion Pictures made, I mean, blockbuster hits, but Orion Pictures was kind of like that independent thing. You know what I mean? Was that redheaded cousin that nobody liked? You know what I mean? was that cousin at Thanksgiving dinner that just ate like a pig and everybody stopped eating and watched that guy? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes you're like, God, when he eats food, it's magical, right? I mean, they gave us RoboCop, which on paper should not be good.
No, listen, they've given us Academy Award winners. They gave Amadeus.
Silence, right? Silence, which beat out this movie.
Yeah. One of my favorites, Arthur, Dudley Moore.
See? Like, come on. Like, so A20, I'm just saying, like, there's no independent company that I think continuously puts out, I mean, like, I would say respected movies.
Yeah.
I mean, Lionsgate sucks.
Well, I mean, Ryan also did throw Mama from the Train, as I'm looking up here too. So
I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah. There's some stinkers, right? Like,